Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 25. It feels so good to be back after a short break. If you follow our podcast on social media, you may know that Madalena and I took some time off from the podcast at the end of August. Of course, it wasn't a break from work or any other responsibilities, so I don't think we can say we're rested. but in fact, it was a pretty busy time for both of us. But now we're back with new ideas for the podcast and many great topics and guests lined up. And speaking of guests, we have not one guest, but two today, and they just came back from vacation, like a real vacation. So not only are we jealous, but we assume they're full of energy today. And if you have ever heard them speak during webinars, podcasts, or any other talks, you know that they are very energetic and fun. So we have very high expectations for this interview.
Yeah, we're very excited to welcome Alexander Dreschel and Josh Goldsmith today. Alexander Dreschel works as a conference interpreter at the European Commission. His love of languages and communication with people is only matched by his affection for mobile devices of all shapes and sizes. Alex has been an iPad user since day one and also knows a thing or two about Android tablets. As co-founder and chief technology officer of Tech for Word, Alexander shares his knowledge in courses on Twitter and on his website. An avid podcaster, he writes and produces two podcasts for language professionals, Lang FM and Troublesome Terps. And Josh Goldsmith is a UN and EU accredited translator and interpreter working from Spanish, French, Italian, and Catalan into English. He splits his time between interpreting, translating, and working as a trainer and researcher focusing on the intersection between interpreting, technology, and education. As co-founder and chief educational officer of Tech for Word, Josh shares tips about technology, translation, and interpreting in conferences and workshops, academic articles, and on Twitter. Welcome, Alex and Josh.
Thanks so much. It's lovely to be here.
Thanks so much. It's really, really a pleasure to speak to you.
It's always funny if you get your bio read back to you. It sounds interesting, but yeah. It's all true.
It's all true.
You might have noticed I tweaked your bio too.
It did, yes. Yeah, totally trust you on that one.
Very impressive. Thank you so much. We're so happy you could join us, guys. So let's get started. Can you please tell us how and when you started your careers?
I can start with that because it's very short for me. I'm not a freelancer anymore. I used to freelance a little bit while I was still in university. So I had the occasional interpreting gig, smaller things that I did on the side to get some experience. I did some book translation for a local publishing house in Leipzig where I went to university. And that was pretty much it. Then I went straight to a staffer position after university.
Well, my story, I think, is a traditional freelancer story. I actually started out as a teacher, a language teacher. I have a background in training, education, a degree in training and teaching. And so I taught foreign languages for many years. But then I moved to a new place and had to reinvent myself. And I decided that I just wanted to become a translator. And so I did, obviously, going through appropriate training then. And after many years working as a translator, I decided I wanted to also add interpreting to my quiver. And so I did. And now I work as a freelancer, yep, for a wide range of different organizations.
That's so cool. And your story, Josh, is similar to mine. I became a freelance translator after I moved to another country.
Yeah. And I started in academia before I became a translator.
Cool.
So what does a typical workday look like for you? And I know typical is different these days than it probably was a few months ago.
Yeah, and even before that, I don't think that really was. Yeah, maybe it's even more typical these days than it was before, at least for me. But then again, I think for a staff interpreter, there is actually a lot of a routine because I always like to say we go into the booth as other people go into the office, basically, because, I mean, we don't get to pick our assignments. We get assigned to meetings, and so we just go where we're told to, and we get the program, like, at least for the current week, we have the full program laid out, and then also for the coming weeks. So there's always changes, and of course, sometimes last minute changes as well, but there's a lot of routine, a lot of continuity, a lot of the working groups, you know, that we work for, I do again and again and again. So for example, just today, I worked in a budget committee, which I've been doing for years. So there's a lot of sort of continuity as well, and it's actually fairly predictable. So the working times are always a little bit, they can change a lot, but the rest is fairly steady, I think, in my line of work.
And I, on the other hand, don't think I have that much that's steady at all. Typical freelancer's life, as when I'm interpreting, obviously, I'm in the hands of the organizers and working at the meeting. Obviously, there's preparation for events in the run-up to them, which can take place on other days. And nowadays, I spend a lot of time working on different projects for Tech Forward. So testing out new technology, reading about new developments, writing, whether it's blog posts or scripts or what have you, recording videos, coming on as guests on different people's podcasts, speaking, and thinking, most importantly, about how to support our colleagues. Really, the aim of our project, and I know we'll talk about it in a minute, is to empower colleagues, empower language professionals to use technology to the fullest in their work. And so now has been an incredible time for us as we've all been moving more and more online and technology is really creeping into our work even more so to get to share our ideas and tips and suggestions with colleagues.
What you just described as your typical nowadays work tasks sounds really fun, actually. So did you have to make any adjustments or changes in your work habits when the pandemic started?
Oh, yes.
I think everything changed when the pandemic came around.
Yes.
The answer is yes. Plenty of changes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I could probably differentiate between sort of changes on a professional or work level and private level as well, because I mean that's one of the topics I like so much about your podcast is about I think you call it clarity between work life and private life. So I think in that regard the lines were blurring for probably all of us. So for us it meant that at the institutions there was sort of a time where we had to figure out how we do all this in a lockdown and in a pandemic. So of course meetings came to a grinding halt at some point, and then we slowly had to sort of reinvent how we go about our daily business, which took some time and also a lot of effort. And sort of on a more personal level, I mean, that meant that some time was available to, you know, invest more time to Tech Forward, which already had been a project that was ongoing. We just didn't have that much time that we could put into. But of course, the pandemic changed all that. So we were able to do the weekly webinars, for example. We had more time to, you know, prepare courses and produce them, which is very time intensive, of course. So that was sort of almost like a double whammy that hit, but in a positive way, at least for me. I hope you see it the same, Josh, but I think you do.
Oh, absolutely. This has been an incredible time and a ton of fun as we've put together new courses, webinars, videos, everything to share work that we'd been putting together for years, actually, that we'd been testing out, running in live courses and so on to really pull it all together. And it's a powerful moment to try to turn your knowledge into something that can be shared with others. We wanted to support colleagues very quickly as everything went remote, which is what led to some of, I don't know if I can have a favorite course, but some of the courses that might be most interesting. One of our most popular courses and one of our most popular free webinars is called the Remote Interpreter's Companion and the Remote Interpreting from Home course. And so, we were thinking about how life exists in a remote era and how we can help people to be productive in these times. And yes, in terms of how we work on a daily basis, I'd say I certainly got a lot more productive personally. And I know that the way that we interact with each other, also, we took it about 12 notches.
Yeah, and also, I don't know if you probably have a similar experience since you have kids as well. It was interesting to see as well how they adapt to, you know, attending school from home. And we consider ourselves very lucky because our school was actually quite well prepared for this. So they had all the infrastructure in place. And for a while we thought, what do they need all this, you know, digital infrastructure for? Because they were just going to school like normally. And then, you know, once the lockdown kicked in as well, for the schools, we were quite happy that our school was well prepared for that. And the kids were ready to sort of change mode from almost from one day to the next. So that was interesting to see as well. And luckily our home was also, you know, well equipped for that. I realized that not everybody is as lucky as that, and a lot of people have been having a hard time sort of adapting to that. So yeah, it's been very interesting for sure.
It has been. I would say in the US, people were not ready to move from one day to the next like that, generally speaking. I mean, some people were better off than others. Yeah, exactly. And I find it interesting to listen to you two talk about this being an exciting time, because you hear so many people talking about what a terrible time it's been. So it's nice to hear that from somebody, especially for interpreters right now. I think it's just been so rapidly changing. And so it's nice to hear from people who are taking advantage of the type of content that you all produce, because it is a lot of work to produce content regularly. So yes, that's really cool.
Absolutely.
Yes, I mean, the goal is always to make it seem effortless, but you can only do that if you really put in the work that's sort of behind the scenes.
Right. And it's certainly not effortless. Yeah. So kind of touching on work-life clarity, since you mentioned it too, we like to talk about that rather than work-life balance, right? Because nothing is ever completely in balance. So it's extremely important for freelance language professionals. And we talk about this topic kind of regularly, but it was definitely the topic of our first episode. What are your thoughts on this, on work-life clarity? And do you try to set boundaries between your work and your personal lives?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this to you before. This is why I really enjoy listening to your podcast, is that you sort of admit and say that it's okay that things are not always in perfect balance, because that's probably impossible. And I think it's important to acknowledge that and say, it's okay. You know, we're all struggling with this. And I think it's important to have clarity. Yes. So one thing I do is sort of on a less regular basis, but every sort of 2 or 3 years, I try to revisit all the projects that I'm involved in and try to see whether it's still time well spent for me, whether it still makes sense, whether maybe it takes too much time, you know, to the detriment of other things that I should be doing. And I'm at least trying to always put family first, because, you know, I mean, everybody who has kids knows that they grow up so fast. It's trite, but you know, it's true. So you want to make the most of the time that they let you spend with them. So that's what I'm trying to do. And of course with my wife as well. And then everything is secondary. And then I try to juggle everything. And then of course, as a staffer, you know, that job comes first, obviously. And then you have to sort of juggle what you do with all the other projects, you know, Tech Forward in this case, or volunteering or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like the idea that you just shared, Alex, of checking in on a regular basis and seeing if the projects that you're pursuing are the things that you're most passionate about, that are the right match for you at a given time. And when I did that, I tend to do that around the new year, actually, that sounds trite too, of course, but sort of reviewing what I've been doing and thinking about what I want to be doing over the course of the next year. And about, I guess, 2 New Years ago, I drilled down to 2 main goals, and those have been the 2 guiding goals for me since then. I've basically just been learning a new language. I'm learning Portuguese, very, very close to starting to work from Portuguese, and working on Tech Forward, and it's been great. But I think that this, coming back around to your question of drawing boundaries, it's difficult for freelancers. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
Especially when you're passionate about what you're doing, to make sure to set aside time for your family, for your friends, for everything else. I always take a proper lunch break, for example. I like to cook a nice meal, sit down for a break. I try to shut off at a specific time every day and say, I'm working until X hour, and then that's it. But yeah, especially when you're building something new, like we are, it's very easy for it to all just creep in.
Yes, not come back out. But yes. it's true what you say, and especially for people who are so committed to the jobs we do, like I think all four of us, and who also do volunteering in the same profession. You know, I mean, we're in professional associations, podcasting. It can really eat up, you know, all of your time if you let it. And I think it's so important to not let that happen. And that's been something that was difficult for me as well, is to learn to that I don't have to do everything. You know, other people are good at stuff too. And I mean, it sounds so stupid, but I had a hard time for a while sort of accepting that and being better about delegating and not, you know, trying to take over everything. So that's been difficult, but I hope I've gotten better at that over time.
It's hard when you're excited about everything going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything feels like a priority, right?
Totally.
Yeah, I get it. So speaking of that, what are some smart habits that have been crucial to you guys in your careers, either related to work, physical or mental health, relationships, et cetera? If you have any habits that you try to keep up with.
Sure. Staying organized is key, I think, if you're juggling so many things like we are. And it probably comes as no surprise, but I use lots of tech to stay organized, to keep myself focused, whether that's a to-do list, which front and center, always guiding me, to having clear systems for staying organized. This is really dorky, but I, in order to be able to find things very quickly, I always put the date of whatever I'm doing on a document, on a project. So I put today's date on my little set of notes for today, which were digital, mm-hmm. and then I can search for them very quickly and find everything I'm looking for quickly. I think that's one of my key smart habits.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely similar. So I swear by using a to-do list and a calendar. And it's not so much about the tech, it's just about using these tools, you know, in whichever way, shape, or form you want to, and it works for you. So it could be paper-based or electronic. For me, if it's electronic, but that's not the point. So having a to-do list for all the things that I need to do. So that's been really important. And I've told the story before, but, you know, I was introduced to this book, Getting Things Done by David Allen, which some of you may know who are sort of into the productivity racket, I guess. But that's really, I mean, it's not exaggerated to say that really changed my life, because he just recommended, you know, using a to-do list, using a calendar, how to use these tools. And that's been really great. So having a trusted system in place, that's really saved me a lot of anxiety, firstly, because I had these moments where I, you know, I was lying in bed at night and I wasn't able to fall asleep because I was thinking about all the things that I needed to do. And, you know, I now have them in my system and I don't need to think about them. So when I go to bed at night, I say, okay, there's nothing I can do about all these to-dos right now. I'm going to get to them tomorrow. And that's fine.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And in my case, it's when these brilliant ideas pop up. You just got to jot them down and then you have to be able to find them again afterwards.
That's my problem. Yes, it's true.
Whatever works for you is just fine for me. I think we all have our system. Some people prefer to have it on paper. Some people prefer to have their agenda on paper. It doesn't work for me at all. But having those systems in place, I think, is key.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, it's so important. Yeah. Now that my daughter started virtual school these days too, I realized that I need to help her set up her systems too, because she has multiple classes a day. She has to get to them on time, you know, open those Zoom links at specific time of the day. And I like realized I couldn't sleep at night because I was like, oh, how do I, like, do I write it down? We printed out a schedule, and then I realized I can just put alarms on her laptop, and so it pops up and tells her, click on this link to go see this teacher for this lesson. And once we did that, which took like 10 minutes, I could sleep at night and I could relax knowing that she's learning independence and I don't have to be there like every half an hour and help her open these links and remind her. So
Veronica's ultra organized. Don't let her fool you. She's very organized.
I have different phases of organization and chaos. Oh gosh, yeah.
It's always ups and downs, yeah.
But on that point, one very simple smart habit, one very simple tip that you can have is to have shared calendars. That, for example, we have one for Tech Forward where we have our meetings and other commitments on there. I have one with my partner about our private things in our private lives, you know, that work-life clarity that you're discussing. But it's great to be able to have everything visible to the other members of your team or the other members of your family.
Yeah, works in a family too. We have that as well. We used to have like the garden variety kitchen calendar, but we're not using that anymore because everybody's digital now.
All right. So let's talk about your professional partnership as co-founders and instructors of Tech Forward. How did this partnership come about and what kind of habits do you think have been important for you for keeping your partnership going and making it work?
We love to tell the origin story. Alex and I met, I don't know, 5-6 years ago now. And we met sort of informally as part of a project that I was working on, realized that we had overlapping interests, and started to talk about, in this case, we were talking about using tablets for interpreting. Concretely, I was looking at using tablets for consecutive note-taking, and we realized that we enjoyed the same subjects, and then
geeking out together
and teaching people about this too. And so I still remember the very first workshop we pitched, the very first session we ran together, and it was perfect. We really complement each other, I think, quite well. So and also I think we both have big ideas and the drive to get things done.
Boy, do we have so many ideas. It's
we have so many ideas.
Yeah. And just to give you a few concrete examples. So usually, I mean, maybe not during the summer holiday, we really try to take time off. Although this year was kind of difficult, but yeah, that's a different story. But one thing we try to do on a regular basis is have a weekly call. We don't have a fixed day, although it often turns out to be Monday if it works out with our professional commitments, but we usually have a weekly check-in call where we just talk about what's going on, the projects we're working on. There's also some private banter, what did you do during the weekend, that kind of thing. But I think that's been very helpful for us to just stay on the same page on an ongoing basis. And for a while, of course, while we did all the webinars and courses and so on, I'd say we'd have almost daily calls, or at least it felt that way, because there was so much stuff to coordinate.
I think it was the case.
And then also when we have calls, or these days, video calls or video meetings with people that we're trying to collaborate with, we take notes. So we usually have a shared Google Doc that we both have open during the call, so we can take notes. We can even ask each other questions. Should we ask about this? What do you think about this? I think this is exciting, and so on. So that's been very helpful for us. And the rest happens on Slack. So we've set up a Slack for our project with lots of different channels. There's lots of automation going on, but that's been a very helpful tool, but also a habit, because we really use it religiously to document, to discuss, and so on. Yeah, and it's just fun. We're really having fun doing this stuff.
Yeah, you're using technology a lot.
Yes, of course.
I mean, no surprise. We actually made a little video that's on our YouTube channel, The Tech Behind Tech Forward, if people want to check out all of the technology that we're using. It's a fun little 20-minute video. But what I wanted to say on this point is, in the remote world that we live in, it's very easy to not have the banter, to not see somebody's face, to not check in, to not have this friendly camaraderie that can really push things forward and bring passion to the work that you're doing. And I think some of our most interesting discussions come about there, and the most interesting ideas pop up when we're bouncing ideas off of each other. So that's something that I think has been great for Tech Forward, and is something I absolutely love.
It's kind of notorious when one of us types in Slack, Josh or Alex, I have an idea. It says, oh no.
And I did it again today.
And I was sort of scared and excited at the same time.
Oh gosh, I can imagine. But as you mentioned earlier, it's important to have a partnership where it's not just people having lots of great ideas, but you also are committed to making them a reality, both of you, right?
So. And, another thing that I think is great for Tech Forward, for our partnership, is that we have complementary skills. So I'm terrible at design. Alex is wonderful at design, which is great. On the other hand, I really like to sit down and write and think, and of course I can think about the pedagogical side of things. I love designing activities that accompany courses. You know, very, very few people run interactive webinars that are actually interactive, where you make people do activities that's not just filling in a simple box on a poll. And I really like to think about how to push towards learning. So that's why I'm the chief educational officer of Tech Forward, but it's also a hat that I love to wear.
Yeah, and if we had a position of chief marketing officer, that would also be Josh. He's also very good at marketing.
True.
And good at geeking out about metrics and funnels.
Oh,
and
I spend a lot of time geeking out about metrics and analytics and all sorts of other stuff that we don't have to go into right now.
That's a whole nother podcast. We could do that.
At some point, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Let me know.
Yeah, but speaking of complementary skills, that's how this podcast happens. Because if I had to edit the podcast, we wouldn't have a podcast at all, ever. So that's totally Veronica's thing.
And Madalena is great at writing and putting things together so that they, you know, there's a flow and all of that. And I'm not great at that. So yeah, there's some complementary skills going there too.
Yeah, and it's really the case of the sum is more than the individual parts, right? When you put us together, we sort of explode into tons of ideas. And I think that's the case with your podcast as well.
Yeah, it's what makes it better, I think, in general. The product is better in the end. But switching gears a bit, so there's a topic that seems to come up more and more these days, since we've been talking a little bit about the pandemic and how things have moved so quickly. You know, things have already been online, but they continue to move online more quickly these days and changing rapidly. So since you guys are so tech savvy, we thought we'd ask you, what smart habits should translators and interpreters establish to stay safe online?
I'll start. You've probably heard it a million times, but you're probably still not doing it. Smart passwords. Smart passwords. Do not use the same password for multiple sites. Get yourself a password manager. There are tons of them out there.
No more sticky notes, please.
Yeah, no sticky notes, no wife's maiden name, you know, grandmother's name.
Birthdays.
Plus the year you were born. No, those are easy to guess.
Yeah.
Very easy to guess. So we talk about this a lot more in our free webinar on staying safe online, and we go into how you create good passwords. But I would say that is one of my number one tips for staying safe online.
Yeah, and the other thing that we usually recommend is using a VPN, so a virtual private network. Sounds complicated, but it's actually super easy. If you just stick with one service. So Josh's a big fan of TunnelBear. I'm a big fan of, what's it called? Encrypt.me, that's right. There's more out there. And if you, you know, listen to podcasts and watch videos on YouTube, you'll find different services recommended. Doesn't matter. I use VPN everywhere outside my house to keep my connection safe. So connecting to public hotspots, for example, then I use it religiously, and some services connect automatically, so you don't even have to think about it. And it has a few added benefits for translators and interpreters as well. So because some of these VPN services also work with streaming sites like Netflix, for example, where you know that there's a certain amount of geo-blocking going on and you get different content depending on where you are. So if you're interested in sort of exploring other content, or you're traveling and you want to get to the content from your home country, then VPN is also a good way of doing exactly that.
Very cool. So that sort of goes into our next question about what are some things we can do to protect our identity, personal information, and data? And could you mention, Josh, I think you said there are some password managers.
I think.
Do you have any that you recommend?
Alex is a raving fan of the one that he uses, so I'll let him take this question. I've been using one for a while, but I'm about to transition, and I'm actually exploring different password managers for my transition to an mPassword manager.
Yeah, the service that I've been using for years and years and years now is called 1Password simply, so number one and password. Because you just have to remember one master password, and then you get to all the other stuff. So it's not just passwords. You can also have secure notes. For example, we have these weird national numbers in Belgium. They're not as dangerous as social security numbers that you have in the US, but you need them from time to time. We just have them in a secure note. You can also store your credit cards. So I do that, which is handy for online shopping. Then you just have the information there, and it can fill that in to the browser for you automatically, not just on your laptop, but also on mobile devices. The added benefit on mobile devices is that you can use like a fingerprint scanner or the Face ID stuff to open the vault, if you will. So you don't even, I mean, you still need to know your one master password, but you know, you can also get in with just your face or your fingerprint, which is pretty cool. So that's something that I would really, really recommend.
Cool. All right. How do we protect our own or our clients' data when using cloud-based storage or backup tools?
So I said you need to have different passwords for every site. You also need to change them. Change them regularly so that they are, should your password be leaked, should there be a data leak somewhere, you're keeping up to date and can make sure to keep that information safe.
Yeah, and just to jump in for a second, I think that's so super important, especially for these cloud services like Google, for example. I mean, Google, they have so many services, and if you use a lot of them, then your one Google login is really, really valuable. So you want to make sure it's safe as it could possibly be.
And most people don't do this. Most people think, oh, I've got one password. It's this great, very hard to guess password, whatever, because they're not using password managers, and they don't change it, which makes it even worse. So please change those passwords regularly. Another thing that I would say is, if you have sensitive, confidential documents, you don't have to upload them. You don't have to put them in the cloud. We're so used to putting everything in the cloud that you think about it. And probably, I mean, in my case, most of my storage is in the cloud because I like the ease of having a backup, of being able to work across devices, of being able to log in and see a copy of whatever it may be, even my passport photo or something like that when I'm on my cell phone. But you shouldn't put the highly sensitive materials in the cloud. You can, if you want to have a backup copy of them, use a physical backup drive and make that copy from your home computer in that way.
Yeah. We have a lot of colleagues who, at least, you know, like me, I work in medicine and life sciences. So you're dealing with clinical trials and patients' documents. And I mean, that stuff, you know, in the US, we have HIPAA, which is the regulation related to health information. So this is something that comes up often, I think. I mean, I can't think of a conference that I've been to that this wasn't a topic of some sort, like how to keep everything secure. And there's just, I think there's so much information out there that it becomes almost overwhelming to translators and maybe interpreters too, I don't know. But it's something that I think is it maybe difficult for people to keep up with because they get into these systems that they use for a while and don't realize, oh, there's something better. Or maybe not. Maybe it's not the next best thing. Maybe some of the old school stuff is a bit more secure. I don't know. But it's interesting when we talk about these types of things because so much is cloud-based now.
Yeah, I think Josh is definitely onto something when he says that, you know, that there shouldn't be a cloud-first default, I guess. Mm-hmm. You don't have to put everything into the cloud just because they make it so easy. It is so convenient. And also, there's a bit of a debate going on whether cloud storage is actually a good backup, but we don't have to get into that. I don't think it is, but it's better than nothing. Let's just say that.
But it probably shouldn't be your only backup either.
Right.
Definitely.
That's what that physical drive is for.
Yeah, definitely.
So I have a little follow-up question, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips on establishing a system for like changing your passwords, as you suggested? Do you put like an alert in your calendar twice a year or once a year or something? Like, what's your system?
I don't really have a system in place, I'm afraid to say. But yeah, it's probably just the easiest to have just a reminder in your in your calendar. And at work, there's a regular interval where we have to change our work passwords for work email and so on. So there's no choice. I just have to do it. And then, you know, if you're in a similar situation, you could just use that occasion and change a couple of other important passwords along with that, you know, like Google or your home banking password and stuff like that. And the password managers really make it super easy.
Do you guys have any tips or tricks for translators and interpreters related to safe online collaboration? So I know that you two collaborate a lot in your work.
We love to talk about collaborating online, whether that is writing a script for one of our courses or brainstorming around this session that we're having right now with you, or whether it's working on documents that you're going to be using for your assignment, whatever that might be, whether it's something you're translating, have your proofreader taking a look at it, or you're working on pulling together terminology collaboratively. We love online collaboration. So I think my number one tip on this front would be, if you're working on shared documents, check the permissions, because it's much better to share just with the person that you want to have access to that document than to share a link, a generic link, that allows anybody who can click on the link to have access to that document. You can also think about what permissions you want to give to the person who you're working with. You might not want them to be able to change all of the text. You might just want them to be able to comment
right
on the text. And that's another thing that you can simply tweak in the settings. It's very easy to do, depending on what you're using for collaboration. There are lots of options out there. And I think we've touched on this in a few of our webinars too. But yeah, that would be my suggestion.
Okay.
And maybe just a quick tip to make that a little bit easier. What you can do is, and I do that to some extent, is you can just have specific folders for stuff that you share with others. So for example, I mean, Josh and I, we obviously have a shared folder, and everything that's in there, the both of us have access to. But if I were to collaborate with other people, you know, with person A, person B, then I could have a folder for projects with person A, projects with person B, mm-hmm. and then just have the permissions on a folder level to just have a little bit of an overview and make it easier, sort of just mentally easier to see, okay, this is shared with that person and that isn't, you know, that might make it a little bit easier.
Great. Great tips. Thank you so much, guys. It was really eye-opening in a sense, because I think maybe a lot of people can relate to that. I tend to get so consumed by day-to-day tasks or things that have to get done that I forget about, staying safe online and just IT security and all these things. That was definitely easier when I was a staffer like you, Alex, because those decisions were taken for me and I was forced to follow them. But these days, as a freelancer, I have to stay on top of it myself. So thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having us on.
And now it's time for one of our popular segments. We'll do What's on Your Desk Today with you guys. And in this segment, we share resources, tools, gadgets, you name it. Anything that we find useful and want to recommend to our listeners. So Alex and Josh, what resources or tools would you like to recommend to our listeners today?
It probably comes as no surprise that the item that is always on my desk is my tablet, my iPad. You know that we're known as the tablet guys, or at least that's where we started, and I use it for everything, from preparation to taking notes. And I don't just mean for interpreting notes. I mean jotting down notes when I'm in a meeting with somebody. If you prefer to write by hand, it's great to do that with a stylus and a note-taking app. We're actually putting together a fun session, which will be not too long after this podcast is released, about another note-taking app with awesome handwriting recognition features in it. So, sorry, tangent there. I use it for looking up terms. I use it for editing texts. I also, instead of printing things out, I like to just print my document to PDF and then mark it up on my tablet, which is also a great thing if you're collaborating with a colleague or you want to give them some feedback, but you're the kind of person that likes to have a pen in your hand when you're editing. I use my tablet for invoicing, for tracking my time if I have a project where I need to be tracking the amount of time I spend for a specific client. I use it as a second screen, and I use it for tons more things, which we discussed. A little plug here, that we've got a special offer for your listeners. And we talk all about this in our course called Productivity Powerhouse, which is all about using your iPad to be more productive. And we go into lots of detail about some of the things I've mentioned and tons more. And really, sure, I'm not giving you, go out and buy this little gadget, but this is the gadget I spend the most time with, I would say. So definitely my number one recommendation.
Yeah, I wouldn't even consider the iPad a gadget. It's basically my main computer at this point. But it's basically an extension
of your arm.
Of myself. No, not to be ridiculous. But I have a little pre-pick, if I may, because Veronica, you were mentioning all these different Zoom links and video call links earlier. There's a very neat little app which is called Meter with double E, so Meeter, which works on mobile devices and on the Mac. And it basically looks at your calendar and checks for Zoom links and Microsoft Team links and WebEx and whatever you may be using.
That is cool.
And shows you all of those video conference links in one list. And then you just have to click on them and you can immediately join the call, which is pretty neat. So that's
a
recommendation.
Need that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can put the link into the show notes. And my main pick is something that is brand new on my desk. And I can show it to you because we have video here. It's an ergonomic keyboard. This is the first one I've ever had. I never thought these are for me, but this is the Logitech K860 ergonomic keyboard. So it means that the keyboard is arranged a little bit differently. So you don't have your hands straight like this, but a little bit in a V shape almost, which makes typing very, very pleasant. And it also has this wavy form. So it's not flat on the desk. It's like a wave form. And it's extremely pleasant to write on, much, much more pleasant than I would have expected. So I'm very, very happy with this purchase. And it's compatible with Windows and Mac. So it works on both platforms. And you can use it with your iPad as well if you want to, because it's Bluetooth. There you go.
That's awesome. Did it take you a while to get used to it? Because it's just shaped differently, or?
I would say maybe 30 minutes. But I can adapt to keyboards fairly quickly, but this was very quick. No problem.
That's really cool.
Yeah. When I switched to an ergonomic mouse, which I will also hold up so you can see what it looks like, it made a huge difference. I mean, if you're spending tons of hours, and I also have an ergonomic stool that I use to keep me sitting up nice and straight, definitely worth the minor investments to take the strain off your body so that you can work more productively and more happily.
It's way cheaper than therapy.
Yeah.
That's so true. Speaking of, the object that I wanted to share today is not tacky at all, but is very much related to strain and pain and, you know, all these things. So I've been really enjoying this set of massage therapy bowls that I bought a while ago. It's a set of little massage bowls that come in different shapes and sizes. There's like 8 or 10 of them in a set. And there's multiple sets available like on Amazon and different stores. So I've just been keeping a couple of them on my desk as a physical reminder to take a little wellness break. And also when I start feeling sore, like I'm hunched over or, you know, something's bothering me in that sense. So they're great as myofascial release or a trigger point release for your palms, for your chest. You can like roll them on your chest to, you know, open it up a little bit. You can stand up and like, you know, press a certain point on your back that's bothering you against the wall. You can even roll it under your feet. That's really, really good too. And the cool thing is that you can even use them at your desk. Like you don't really have to stand up, but you could. So they don't take much space. And if you're super stiff and sore like me, you'll, you know, yes, they hurt. You'll feel the pain, but it hurts really good. So I highly recommend those.
On a related note, I think these balls are awesome. Yeah, but I got my wife one of these fidget cubes a couple of years ago because she often does huge translation projects and she would just sit in front of the screen, for example, proofreading or just thinking about something. And she always needs to, you know, yeah. Fidget with something. Yeah. And that fidget cube was, I think, one of the best presents I ever gave her is what she told me. So doesn't give you relief at the pain point, but it's also a nice tool for translators who are desk bound.
Veronica always has these funny like little things that you can manipulate yourself with. She had this one thing you put on your chair has like spikes on it.
The acupressure mat.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, just thinking about that sounds painful. So mine is actually something I got recently. I don't think I've talked about this yet on here. It's something I've wanted for a while, but it seemed a little bit like a frivolous expense, but Veronica knows that I love coffee, and I would be the type of person who warms up your coffee like 30 times because I get working on a project or a set of emails or something, and then it goes cold, and I don't like cold coffee, so I'm constantly going back to the microwave, zapping it as many times as possible in a day. And I came across this mug called an Ember mug, You may have heard of it. I'm not sure. Ember, E-M-B-E-R. And we can link to that in the show notes as well. But you can control the temperature of the mug from your phone.
What?
So, yes. And it's Bluetooth. And it comes with a little saucer that actually it charges on.
Wow.
And I think it's good for several hours. But anyway,
that's so cool.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. So you can set the temperature. You know, if you're a tea drinker, you can set it to be hotter, whatever. And then it's got a little light that shows you when it's charging or when it's fully charged. And you can take it anywhere all over the house. And they have a travel one for people that go with the travel size coffee everywhere. So it's been a fun thing. But anyway, so thanks again to you guys for joining us today. We really enjoyed our conversation with you. And we hope that our listeners enjoy it as well.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, real pleasure.
And keep up the great work. I love the podcast.
Thank you. And before we go, where can our listeners find out more about you or online or learn more about what you do?
Our website.
Take it away.
Chief Marketing Officer to the rescue here.
Chief Marketing Officer.
Our website is techforward.com. Word at the end. No surprise for the language professionals.
Ooh, pun in there.
We are on, let's see, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. So you can find us in lots of different places. We love to talk to people there. We've got tons of free content. We love to put out stuff that is helpful for our peers. And so you can find all of it, 15 hours of free webinars and several free introductory courses and lots of things that were ideas that we have that we decide to share on all of those channels.
More coming up.
And there's always more coming.
Yeah, awesome. We'll put those links in our show notes and we'll follow you guys as well if we're not already. And we have great news for our listeners. Alex and Josh have generously offered our listeners free access to their Staying Safe online webinar, as well as 20% discount on their Productivity Powerhouse course. These offers, though, are time sensitive, so make sure that you check the links in our show notes. And you can get 20% off the Productivity Powerhouse course until September 20th using the discount code SMARTHABITS, or simply visit our show notes for the direct link. And that's it for this week's episode. Next week, we'll be sending our email subscribers a summary of today's episode with a link to the show notes so you can quickly find all the resources that we mentioned today. If you'd like to receive our emails, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And make sure that you check out the Tech Forward website and follow Alex and Josh online. Our next episode will come out on September 22nd. And if you want to hear about the topics of our episodes before they're released, be sure to subscribe to our emails and follow us on social media.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd love it if you would leave us a review and please share the podcast with other translators you know.